That's our theme music from Sarita Murdoch's Many Lines. I'm Sheldon Brown, and this is Mental Health Radio. Take it from us. We're funded by Framework and have changed our focus. Empowering mental health is our theme, and we're emphasising hope, recovery, positivity, and therapies such as mindfulness and meditation. Today we talk about the controversial issue of suicide and a specific project by Devonport's Depot Art Space to stimulate a much-needed conversation about New Zealand's tragically high suicide rates. Roaring Silence is a soon-to-be-published book featuring stories of suicide survivors or their relatives and friends. It's an emotional and heartfelt expression of the cost of suicide, its tragic repercussions, and the grief which often results. Our guest today is the editor of the book, Roaring Silence, Amelia Harris, a staff member at Depot Art Space. And Roaring Silence is very much in the throes of production. I think Amelia will be able to tell us when the launch of it is. But Amelia, welcome to Mental Health Radio. Take it from us. You've been left in the hot seat. You were going to get some support from other staff members and other people involved in Roaring Silence.
That's right.
But they've disappeared.
Yeah, they're really, you know, busy on lots of other projects, so it is just me today. But, yeah, happy to be here.
Well, that's it's great to have you here, and I think a very important subject. Suicide, well, it's wrapped up in suicide, suicide prevention, and just getting a conversation going, really, isn't it? Which I believe you regard as being very, very important.
We do. It's important, but I guess the main thing that's happened as part of this publication is that we've realised just how much people have to say about it. The response has been extraordinary, and we've had 79 contributors to the book. And some of those have been, you know, ranging from quite short poetry through to really quite long non-fiction. And, you know, in putting a book like this together, there's also all the dialogue that happens between me and the contributors. And all of that dialogue, there's also been a lot that people wanted to say. And, you know, a lot of it actually is about supporting this project, the idea behind it, and just that we all need to we need to accept what people have to say about their experiences with suicide.
And the response has not been just in New Zealand, has it? You've had contributors from all around the world.
We've got some writing from California. We've got some non-fiction from Berlin. And, you know, in New Zealand as far as the Chatham Islands, you know, Waiheke Island, and all up and down the country.
And also some fairly important people who played a part in, letting New Zealand know about the very high rate of suicide. And in that, I'm talking about a former chief coroner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's an interview with Judge Neil McLean, who I spoke to. He is based in Hamilton, and so we did a telephone interview with him. And we had this, you know, he gave a really fantastic sort of historical background to his role and the recent change in the Coroner's Act. And then he also told me some great stories about how he would travel around with Mike King up and down the country, and they would do a sort of double act, the comedian and the judge. So the judge gives the facts, what is really happening, what are the numbers, what are people going through, and then Mike King gives a more sort of personal side of the story. So that was great to hear him talk about that.
Yeah, I'd be interested though, did he sort of express any emotion around suicide, or is that too personal a question?
I asked him how he copes with the emotional nature of suicide, and he said that, you know, for his job, it's really important for him to be quite unemotional, actually, and rational, because that's what his job requires. And so that's what he tried to bring to the job. But I think when I talked to him about his touring around with Mike King, he did mention that, you know, it was a very emotional journey going around and speaking to people's relatives. And that, you know, when he would travel with his wife, and that she was his, you know, really important support person during that time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he did, you know, I was really grateful that he actually, you know, talked about some of the slightly harder emotional side of dealing with suicide.
Well, and Mike King, too, has been doing a wonderful job in this area of suicide prevention and targeting very controversial areas where there have been clusters, I think we could call it clusters of suicide, like up north, where mm-hmm. there are currently developments there, very concerning developments about the rate of suicide. I think he also targeted Kawerau and also in the Wairarapa, where this event occurred with multiple suicides close together. Mm. So he's been going to some very sensitive and controversial areas.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess Justice Neil McLean would have been exposed to areas which have been very severely touched by suicide.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But, you know, one of the things that he mentions in the interview is how important the stats are to know in reality, as opposed to kind of rumours and myths that, you know, around suicide, because the topic is such a sensitive one, there can be a lot of rumours going around that so that this school's had this and that somebody's been in hospital for that. And, you know, one of the things that he found to be the most important is to actually get the facts. And quite often, you know, they would investigate a cluster that there were rumours of, and they would find that it there wasn't one.
Really?
So that's why I think it was so important for him to travel with Mike King, is because he has got, you know, he had a great handle on the reality, the statistical reality, mm-hmm. you know. Yeah.
I mean, we've had the provisional suicide statistics out, and while they're relatively firm, aren't they, there's been comment, and whether this is just speculation or not, that those figures are much greater than the statistics actually represent, because I think the suspicion that many car fatalities may have a suicide element in them. And so even though we have these statistics, we also have this sort of bigger story that really surrounds suicide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, certainly, you know, there's quite a few stories, you know, that have been told to us through the time of doing this book, of things that people thought were suicides but weren't counted as suicides. That's, you know, things from the family members. And this is a historical reality as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think these are all really valid points to raise and to discuss and to figure out, right, well, how can we do things better? And I think, you know, that, you know, Judge Neil McLean, you know, that was at the top of his mind, is how do we figure out how to do this, work with the subject better?
Right. I mean, apart from doing the interview with you, is he offering his support to a launch function or promotion of the book or that sort of thing, or is he just staying in the background?
Oh, we haven't been in touch with him about the launch yet, but, you know, he was so supportive of the book and the conversation, and he still travels actually around the country when invited to, you know, to go to different groups. So I think he's, you know, this isn't something that he's sort of dropped since
not shying away from it.
No, I mean, and now he's still a judge for the ACC court, so he's still very much, you know, he's got a lot of work to do still.
Right, yeah. Well, we should get back to our agenda. I mean, what really has stimulated an art gallery like Depot Art Space to publish a book about suicide?
Well, Depot Art Space is a gallery, but it's also a community, and it in that community it has, you know, art galleries. It has a recording studio. It has a sort of wide range of staff who work there doing different things. There's an employment agency that helps creative people find work as well. So
and a publishing arm
a publishing house, of course. So so we're slightly more complex than a standard art gallery, and so we get involved in lots of different projects. This is one of them, and this is something that was really important because, you know, Devonport is a community that is affected, like all New Zealand communities, by suicide. So it became really important to Linda Blinko, who is the creative director, to keep a dialogue open and to let people express themselves about the topic, because I think she became really aware of how ostracized some people can be when a relative has died by suicide. And so it was really important to Linda. She applied for funding from the local Takapuna Devonport local board, got some funding, and then we started working on this project.
Well, one of the things that I learned during our Mental Health Awareness Week in October is that suicide actually is, and mental health issues are quite prevalent among the artistic community, the performing artists, and actually, Take It From Us had its first ever outside broadcast where I emceed a sort of a forum of six performing artists, and all of them told a story about how they had been touched by suicide and, touched by mental health.
Mm-hmm.
But also they had lost colleagues, performing artists, to suicide. And I guess it was a revelation to me that, you know, the creative profession is quite a tough one.
Mm-hmm.
I guess because of income streams, you know, income is not sort of regular. Some of the performing artists don't know when they're going to be in work or out of work. What do they do for part-time work to sort of sustain themselves? And so this was all quite a revelation to me. And, you know, they've set up a special fund to support people in the performing arts and creative arts to provide peer support for them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the way you paint Depot Arts Base is a community sort of centre, and I did have the privilege of meeting your creative director, Linda Blinko, and in that sort of chat, she implied, I guess, that she has been exposed to suicide through her work.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you know, the great thing that's happening at the moment is that, you know, we're standing up to listen to people and give them a place where they can safely discuss suicide. But it's not just us. You know, the New Zealand Music Foundation has also been working extremely hard on this topic. You'll find performing arts and theatre, it's at the top of their minds as well, that, you know, we need to do more to actually sort of try to make a safe community, you know, and that those things are actually within our powers, you know, and we need to sort of get skills, you know, maybe do some training where possible, and give people a platform to safely discuss topics. I think that is really important.
I guess, though, the sort of basis of suicide can often be lack of work, housing crisis, poor accommodation, living on welfare, ill health, perhaps a mental health issue, and I guess from my point of view, I don't really see the government addressing any of those issues. You know, I hear John Key overseas trying to organise another trade agreement, but we never hear about him trying to find out about insights into social issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And those are the things that are the basis of people getting so desperate that they take their lives.
Yeah, I agree that, you know, the government has got a role in doing what it can do. And I think that communities also have a role in doing what they can do. Families have a role in doing what they can do. Individuals also have a certain amount of responsibility. So for me, the answer to this would be quite broad. And what you're talking about is quite a lot of broad issues.
Yes,
and I would also put in, good diet, exercise, how we deal with suicide needs to be incredibly broad. Stop smoking if you can,
Stop the drugs and alcohol.
Yeah, try to work with your addiction, issues and things like that. I mean, it is hard, it is broad. But, the other thing, you mentioned the government, and one of the things that's come out quite strongly is a lack of acute mental health services being available to people when they need it. And this has been a consistent thing that's been mentioned to us throughout the time we've been working on this. And so when I was driving over here, I was thinking, what actually can we do? Like, what are the things that we can do? And one of them would be to go to Action Station and fill in the People's Mental Health Review. I think that could be a really important thing. And also, the other thing that we could do is try not to wait until you are acute. We all have a relationship to our own mental health. And, once you've sort of lived long enough, you realise when you're starting to feel a bit down for a little bit too long. And, we need to sort of develop the relationship within ourselves to be able to identify that. And maybe at that point, start to do things differently, either exercise more, eat better, get some help from professionals. And, don't stop trying to seek help from professionals until you actually find someone that you, are happy to work with. Like, when people ring, one of the 0800 numbers and they can't get through, don't stop there. Keep trying, try different things out.
Yeah, well, I do facilitate wellness and recovery workshops, and of course, one of the key platforms to getting well and staying well is doing those things that are good for us every day.
Mm.
And of course, if we focus on those, then hopefully we won't get into crisis and we won't have to ring those 0800 numbers. So all of those things that you've mentioned in terms of good diet, exercise, sleep, good sleep, those sorts of things are so important to keep ourselves well. Well, let's take a break, and we're going to play a little bit of veteran
Eric Clapton.
Eric Clapton. And the first track is Hey Hey. So that was Eric Clapton with this is Mental Health Radio. Take it from us, and I'm Sheldon Brown, talking to Amelia Harris, who is the editor of Roaring Silence, a staff member at Depot Art Space. Very much like to know who has responded to the call from yourself and from Depot Art Space to tell suicide survivor stories or to tell about suicide?
Well, we've had a very, very broad response from our 79 contributors. And, you know, we put the message out through our networks, through our social media. We put it out on the Big Idea website. And, you know, over time we just got more and more and more responses. And, you know, people would keep emailing in a piece of writing, some poetry, some photographs, or they'd just want to dialogue on the topic and talk about what, you know, type of content we were looking for. And sort of as the project has grown, you know, we've sort of had this sort of amazing map of people from all over, you know, from a few places in the world, from all over New Zealand, but from all sort of types of people. From, you know, we've got drawings from children, we've got poems from teenagers, we've got essays from sort of, you know, quite well-established writers, we've got artwork from Nigel Brown, we've got a cartoon from Rod Emerson, you know, and actually from a great number of, like, fantastic local poets, we've got work. So, you know, from our experience, it has been a very, very broad range of people that have contributed.
What was your own reaction to that contribution, those contributions, and the volume of them?
Oh, it was just completely overwhelming. And it was so exciting, and as, you know, contributions would come in, I'd print them off and I'd run down to Linda's office and I'd say, hey, have you seen this that came in? Have you seen this, like, beautiful, like, digital artwork by Rangatuhia Hollis? Just an incredible. And the file size was ginormous. Like, it was almost impossible to get it, you know, through the email. It was the biggest still image file I've ever received in my life.
What did this overwhelming response tell you, though? Did it tell you that people wanted to express themselves about this? They wanted to be listened to. What was your conclusion around that?
I think that a lot of people they've been writing and, you know, dealing in their own way with the subject of suicide, either from their own experience or from a family member or friend. And a lot of people really, you know, took this chance to go there and either write again on the topic or go through their history of writing or photography or painting and think about it, you know, whether they had already something that could be suitable for the book. So I think people, I mean, the emails that I've had with contributors, I mean, people would send in a contribution, but they would also send a nice little phrase that said, so glad you're doing this, and good on you for doing this. And, you know, sometimes they would say, keep up the good work. And as a, you know, as an editor, say, of this publication, you know, that support actually means a lot, you know, as you're going along. And, you know, with 79 contributors, actually That's a lot of material to wrangle, to proof, to lay up, to get the bios, to get the name spelt correctly, to get the index done. And so all that little peppering of support that we received from back from contributors actually was, you know, I was really grateful for
it. I understand that it offered quite a few challenges to you as well, and that you have to be within the constraints of publishing information about suicide too. So I gather that you've had to maybe edit a little bit of contributions?
We didn't so much edit as ask contributors to write. So for every contributor, they have a bio, and that maybe they've got a photograph or they've got a poem, and then at the bottom of the page there's a bio which can offer a chance for somebody to give a bit of support for anybody who might have gone through what they're going through, or might still in the future go through what they're going through. So there's quite a lot of positivity through those bios, and the bios are an important part of the book, because they, you know, sometimes a poem, you might read a poem and you might think, oh my gosh, this person, you know, I hope they're not still in that pain. And then, you know, so the bio can function as a way of going, okay, well, this person, you know, they're also fine now. And, you know, that they've learned quite a lot, you know, through going through what they've been through and being able to express themselves about it.
The title, very significant, The Roaring Silence.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's that. Linda made up that title, and I think it really beautifully signifies the what happens when there's a lack of dialogue, and what happens when there's a lack of expression. And the roaring silence, I think, is something, you know, sometimes I think you can feel it when you're not expressing yourself or when you're suppressing yourself. There is a sort of roar that goes on that's sort of indistinct until you express it.
Well, I think it probably applies to the wider mental health community and the wider, the incidence of mental health. Mm. You know, I think there is a bit of a roaring silence, particularly in maybe more well-to-do communities where it's not to be talked about, nobody wants to know, they don't want their bubble sort of burst. But, you know, I think it was, what, 3 or 4 months ago that the provisional suicide statistics were published. They were the highest, I think, 579 suicides in New Zealand, the highest for, what, 6 to 8 years. And I saw commentators saying, well, there is a bit of a roaring silence around this. You know, nobody has really reacted in a very big way. You know, the provisional statistics weren't front page. They were sort of tucked away. It's like we want to sweep this subject under the carpet. It's a very bad reflection on life in New Zealand.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I think that I understand people who don't want to talk about it, because basically before I started this project, I was one of them.
Oh,
you
really?
Know? Yeah, so, you know,
must have been a challenge to take this project on.
It really was a challenge. So, you know, I really, and I feel for people out there who, you know, don't want to talk about it or don't want to remember back to relatives or friends who have died, or, you know, find it hard. Suicide is a very hard thing to grieve, because the grief is very complex. It's riddled with guilt, you know, your own personal guilt about your friend or about so-and-so.
What could I have done? Could I have done more? Did I not respond when I needed to?
Yeah. So I think it's a complex thing, and I understand why people don't want to actively think about it. But at the same time, I think it's really necessary for us to move forward into a future where we're reducing that toll and we're doing something about it. We need to know more about it, and we need to hear people, you know, or read people's experience of it. And, I mean, you know, what I realised through editing this book was, you know, I'd read different people's experience of mental health. And, the thing that surprised me the most was that I looked back on my own life and saw my mental health, like my periods of, you know, feeling low. And, you know, really, I could really resonate with the people in this book. And, you know, I think that's quite a powerful thing to have happen. And I think that that potentially might happen to other people when they read that, when they read this book, is they might go, oh, this person, they're not so different from me. Mm. And, you know, if things had been slightly different, for example, for me, if I didn't have my family, my parents, my brother and his kids all around me and able to kind of house me at different times, you know, I can't say that I would be, you know, any different to the most extreme, you know, mental health cases.
Among the contributors, how often is mental health an issue, a significant issue to them feeling suicidal or perhaps even acting on their thoughts?
Well, I think that probably most people, you know, would say that it's a lack of mental health that makes you want to end your own life.
Mm. You looked a bit surprised when I asked that question.
But I would just take it as absolutely given, you know,
right,
that actually a natural, the most sort of natural state to be in is to want to be alive. I think wanting to not be alive is quite an unnatural state. You know, at the same time, you know, that gets into the euthanasia territory, which is a cousin of suicide, which is, you know, so, yeah, I understand that, so I'd say that suicide, people who, in the book, most of them would, they're recovering from mental health issues of some sort.
Yeah. Mm. Well, let's take another music break, and we're playing Eric Clapton today, and the second track is Tears in Heaven.
Thank you.
So that was Tears in Heaven from Eric Clapton on Mental Health Radio. Take It From Us. We're talking to Amelia Harris, the editor of Roaring Silence, and I think a very apt title for a book about, I guess it's not just about suicide, Amelia, is it? It's about suicide prevention. It's about trying to encourage a conversation around suicide. Is that the way you see it?
Absolutely. Yeah, prevention, awareness, reflection, expression. There's sort of research components to it. We've, got interviews with people. So as well as accepting people's submissions, we've also looked to see, okay, what are some of the gaps and how can we fill them by actively going out and seeking submissions from people or seeking interviews with people, because my impression is that there's a huge amount of research that needs to happen before we can really start to make big inroads into reducing the toll. There's incredible research that needs to happen. So, that's part of what this book is about.
Are you aware of that research already having been done, or people undertaking it at the moment? Have you uncovered anything like that?
There have been a few different books published, and I know from talking to Manu Fotu from the Waitemata District Health Board that they're working on a whole lot of research, from their perspective as well. In terms of what we've been doing, we've been doing a lot of, qualitative, I guess, research, really hearing people and really being a really friendly ear to people. And I think, that's an interesting way of doing research, is when you sit with somebody and you be the friendliest ear and you accept, you accept everything they say and all the different ramifications of the stories. I mean, some of the interviews are pure rants.
Okay.
For example, Caitlin Smith, the singer, she came up to the depot and I know Caitlin a little bit, and we sat down together and I just said to her, "How's it going?" And then for the next half hour, I heard, "How's it going?" And actually sometimes it's as simple as asking that question and having a friendly ear, and you really get to hear what people are going through and what they feel about suicide.
Well, Caitlin Smith was on that forum at Tapo Theatre, and just 2 weeks ago, in fact, or it was last week, we were able to edit that program down and feature comments from people like Caitlin Smith and others involved with Tapo Theatre. So that was a really great privilege, and that's available on our own mental health radio website, www.takeitfromus.co.nz. In the book Roaring Silence, are you going to give any advice to people who get that call, "Look, I'm feeling suicidal, I'm going to jump off the bridge, this happened to me just before Labor weekend, the day before Labor weekend," and in this case, this person actually lived very close to the bridge, walking distance, and I didn't, I just had to drop everything. Even though it was a long weekend and I didn't even know whether I'd be able to get over the bridge because of, suspected traffic congestion and that sort of thing.
But
is there any advice as to how to manage that sort of, I guess it's crisis?
Well, I think, one of the things that we advocate for is a type of suicide first aid, and actually through Lifeline you can do a variety of courses, and some courses you can do online, and so those are, what I think we need to develop is a population that can cope with other, each other's emotions and cope with each other in difficult times as well as in nice times of sitting around at the barbecue. And we need to be able to cope when people don't want to be at the barbecue and instead they're really unhappy. We need to accept and cope with that situation too. We do have to drop everything sometimes, and I've had to do that too in the past, and I've had to drive and be uncertain about how my friend is going. Mm. And, those are things that I think, we need to either to be able to do, or we need to make steps towards being able to do that. It is difficult, but, at the same time, I've been thinking lately that, while suicide is an incredibly difficult thing, at the same time, a lot of people say, we shouldn't talk about suicide because it puts the idea into people's head. And I know as an ex-smoker, if I watch TV or something and I see somebody smoking, it puts the idea in my head. Right. And so I think that's probably how it works for suicide too, is that, you hear people talking about it and you think, I've had those feelings too. But, to become an ex-smoker, you need to have that strength that's like, okay, no, I'm not going to smoke. I want to be alive. I want to be in relatively decent health if I can. And so I think that's the kind of strength and resilience that we need to build up in a general population too, or move towards that.
I'm sure the book would feature people who have attempted suicide unsuccessfully and are now enjoying very fulfilling lives, flourishing lives, that sort of thing. And I suspect that there's a lot of people around like that.
You're absolutely right. There are a lot of people who are very grateful that it didn't work out, that their attempt didn't work out, and there's a lot of people who have, since then developed resilience and have had to develop routines that exist in their life. They know themselves well enough to know that they have to get up in the morning, they have to make their bed. They have to go out into the sunlight a little bit. They have to do these things.
Have a shower, have breakfast.
Yeah, those are great ideas. Sometimes it can be that simple. So you're right that a lot of the contributors have, they've moved on past that acute phase, but they still, a lot of them still have, some lingering, difficulties now and then. Mm. But you really need to, read their submissions, their texts to.
Well, you've got a little poem in front of you there, Amelia.
I do. I have the shortest poem in the book is one called Hearts by Karen Serres, and it goes like this. Hearts have been spoken about enough, but always so necessary to feed them.
Wonderful. Well, let's take another music break after that little expression there. We've got Eric Clapton on Take It From Us. Nobody knows you when you're down and out. Well, that was Eric Clapton, Nobody Knows You When You're Down and Out, and perhaps the title of that song is quite apt, Amelia. It's hard to be with somebody who is feeling desperate and suicidal over a long period of time, isn't it? Have you learnt anything from this project, this publishing of Roaring Silence, that you could share with us in terms of how to support somebody over a long period of time?
You know, I can really understand your feeling of that it is difficult over a long time to support somebody. You know, one of the things that, you know, we'd probably advocate for at the depot, is using creativity, using art, using music, using expression, to not have this roaring silence contained in you, but to, you know, express yourself through painting, drawing, colouring. You know, I think why that whole adult colouring phenomenon even started is a response to mental health needs. You know, that's really clear to me. And so what I would advocate for is for people to make the next step, you know, use those same colouring pens and draw your own pictures, you know, draw your own colouring, make your own colouring books, give them to friends. I would really advocate, I think that's why a lot of people turn to the arts in the first case, is because they've got something inside them, they need to express it. It doesn't satisfy them to express it just around the dinner table. They want to, you know, there's something more going on, there's something more complex, and they, you know, creativity is about finding those funny little journeys that you go on to figure out what your expression is like.
Well, I'd corroborate that, because I was hopeless at art at school and always believed that I was hopeless at art. I did have a period where I needed to find my creativity, and I did that through beadwork and later bone carving, which in fact ended up with me working at Framework full time. So it converted my life back into productivity and flourishing. I used to try and sell my beadwork and bone carving at the Devonport Community Centre on a Saturday morning, which is right close to, right next door to a depot art space.
Yeah.
And that was all part of, I think, a very successful recovery.
Yeah,
and a discovery that yes, I have got some creative ability. I can use wire. I still use beads and wire to decorate my apartment. And I have a lot of international guests that come there through Airbnb, and they actually ask me, "Are you an artist?"
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
And I find that quite a flattering question, because I'm not an artist and I don't profess to be an artist, but I think those early experiences sort of cultivated my appreciation of creativity and art.
Mm. Oh, I would encourage people to just to be bad artists. You know, that is
right.
Like, that is great to me too. You know, don't worry about being a good artist or a great artist. You know, be a bad artist. Just, you know, go for it.
Well, art is very personal anyway, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, exactly.
And, people might really like bad art.
Well, you know.
As well as good art.
Could be true.
Yeah, well, it sounds as though, you know, you've expanded your understanding of this area. Roaring Silence, have you got a launch date?
We don't.
No,
we don't have a launch date. You know, it's at the printers in pre-press at the moment. So, you know, we've been lucky to have Stuart Shepherd from Saw Print get on board with this project from quite an early stage. And Saw Print are part sponsoring the project. So, you know, that's been really great to have them on board. And so it's with them at the moment in pre-press. And so by the end of this week, we should, you know, find out when we might be able to get the book. But, you know, we're not trying to rush it because, you know, we were rushing it a bit before and it got really stressful.
Right.
We don't really want this project to be stressful.
No,
you know,
it would be a bit counterproductive.
Yeah,
really,
exactly,
wouldn't it?
So we made some executive decisions to take care of ourselves, you know, and to do this project at a really manageable pace.
So are there others that you'd like to thank publicly? You mentioned the Waitemata and Devonport local board, is it?
Devonport Takapuna local board. They gave the sort of seed funding, so the initial boost came from them. Depot Arts Base have put a lot of energy and resources and time into it, and that includes me. You know, then really I want to thank all the people who contributed. Like, they're, you know, they've been awesome. And I, you know, I really respect their work. Then people like Stuart Shepherd and Saw. And then also we had an exhibition by a group called The Escape Artists. And they were advertising executives, a lot of whom had retired. And they gave up their work for auction towards the publication. And so, you know, it has been very much, you know, a lot of people behind this project and a lot of community support. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, that's where it's really at for us at Depot Arts Base. That's the primary reason for our existence, is to be part, to be an important part of the community and to do what the community needs. And, you know, that's, suicide has been flagged to us as one really important thing that we need to work on.
Well, congratulations to Depot Arts Base for undertaking this project, and I would really recommend any of our listeners to drop in Depot Arts Base just around the corner from Countdown or New World.
New World.
Oh, better get that right. But a wonderful place. I went there to meet Linda Blinko and Amelia and Julia, who in fact was at Topo Theatre the day of our outside broadcast, and she mentioned this project and my ears pricked up, and so thanks to Julia for mentioning it at a Mental Health Awareness Week event.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, Julia West came on board in this project, and you know, it really, you know, made me wonder about whether there was, you know, a God, because it was like an angel had been sent to us, you know. Like, I'm not a deeply religious person, but it did make me think, you know, wow, somebody has offered their services to us at the perfect time.
As a volunteer.
And that was Julia, so really, you know, so great to have her on board.
Yeah, well, wonderful. We'll be keeping tabs on Roaring Silence and letting our listeners know, and posting it on Facebook when there is a launch date. I'll certainly be interested in being along there if I'm allowed, and I think it's a wonderful project. So thank you very much, Amelia. Well, that was our interview with Amelia Harris of Depot Art Space, and I want to thank her personally for her sensitive and personal comments about this controversial issue of suicide. We will bring you progress reports on the availability of Roaring Silence when it is launched and published, and I just loved her comments about creativity, and she described creativity as those funny little journeys that we can go on, whether they're it's bad art or good art, those little journeys are so good for our recovery and our health. And I'm just thinking that given that we would have been talking about suicide on Take It From Us, that, you know, there are places, 0800 numbers, where you can call, particularly Lifeline on 0800 543 354, the Suicide Crisis Helpline, which is 0508 828 865, Youth Services on 3555 906, that's an 06 number. There's the Depression Helpline on 0800 111 757. So just keep those in mind, and we'll be back next week talking about talking therapies on Take It From Us on Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us. So remember our website, www.takeitfromus.co.nz, where we upload edited versions, and that's my next job today, to upload and edit the interview with Amelia Harris. So go well.